This is Carol Bond, returning with the second half of the reading of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 25th. We have one more article to Abby, a letter to Abby, that looks that it might be helpful. Here's how it reads. Dear Abby, as chairman of the American Institute of CPAs Tax Executive Committee, may I offer some clarification to you and your readers about your answer in your July 13th column titled, Couple Deep in Tax Hole Need Help in Climbing Out? In fact, three groups of tax preparers have unlimited practice rights under Department of the Treasury regulations to represent their clients on any matters before the IRS: certified public accountants, attorneys, and enrolled agents. None are more qualified than CPAs. CPAs are licensed by state regulators and must meet minimum education requirements to sit for their national licensing exam and then fulfill ongoing continuing education requirements, as well as abide by a code of professional ethics. Attorneys have a generally similar system. Enrolled agents are often former IRS employees who are licensed by the IRS after passing an exam. Enrolled agents are competent and respected tax professionals, but the fact they are licensed by the IRS does not mean they are better qualified or superior in serving clients than are CPAs or attorneys. IRS.gov has a page explaining the different types of tax return preparers and their qualifications, which may be helpful to your readers. And this letter is signed Troy K. Lewis, CPA. Here's her response. Dear Mr. Lewis, thank you for the clarification and for expanding my reply to that letter. It was not my intention to imply that CPAs are less qualified than enrolled agents, and if I created that impression, I sincerely apologize. We'll turn now to another columnist, Dr. Roach. This is the first letter. Dear Dr. Roach, please tell me about the supplement SAMe. It's spelled capital S-A-M and then a small e. I am a woman, 58, who suffers from osteoarthritis from my exercise routine, which is 3 days of heavy lifting with free weights and 15 miles of jogging each week. I love the workouts, but not the pain it causes in my hands, knees, and lower back. I get relief from ibuprofen and the like, but these can cause problems with long-term use. I have checked with several doctors and pharmacists concerning this supplement, but they know nothing about it. Doctors in Europe have been prescribing it since the 1970s. Can you give me your opinion of this supplement? And the letter is initialed KZ. Here's Dr. Roach's answer. S-adenosylmethionine, usually referred to as SAMe, is a naturally occurring substance found in the body, and it has been used as a supplement in people with depression and those with osteoarthritis. It appears to have effectiveness in both cases. Regular readers of this column know that I seldom recommend supplements, but SAMe is one of the few that has good data backing it up. In a meta-analysis of 11 trials, SAMe was found to be about as effective at improving function and pain as ibuprofen-like drugs, but with fewer adverse effects. it may take a full 2 months to reach peak effectiveness based on a 2004 study. As always, I have to warn that supplements are not FDA regulated. Sammy is also relatively expensive, about $40 for 60 tablets at a U.S. warehouse store. Very inexpensive products are a warning that the product may not be of high quality or even contain what it is supposed to. This supplement is generally considered safe, but it is always best to speak with your doctor before taking any supplement. Another favorite columnist is Mary Hunt, who writes under the headline Everyday Cheapskate. Today's column is titled Make Soap Scum Mildew Disappear Like Magic. Here's her column. When all three messages landed in my inbox on the same day, the problem of soap scum, moldy mildew, and hard water buildup grabbed my attention. If three people wrote, I'm pretty sure they represent thousands of others who share the same problems but don't send a letter. It's a common problem. Here's how the letter reads. It's a quotation from someone named Pat. We recently remodeled our kitchen with stainless appliances. We have treated well water. Within the very first week, we had a long water stain from the water dispenser, and I can't get it off. It looks terrible. Is there any way to remove it? Help! And Diane writes, quote, how do you remove hard water spots from shower doors? Ronnie asks, my shower mat has turned almost black. I have tried to clean it but have been unsuccessful. Can you help me? And here's how Mary responds. Quite possibly one of the best tips I've ever received came from a guy who is a professional property manager. He manages apartment rentals and lots of them. As an apartment is vacated, his job is to see that it is thoroughly cleaned and made ready for the next occupants. He told me that the biggest challenge is always the bathroom, specifically the tub and shower. He kindly left specific details up to my imagination, but let me know that gross is not strong enough to describe what he often finds. And that's when he gave me his super magical potion, the only product he uses to return showers, tubs, tile, enclosures, faucets, and doors to their original sparkling clean and sanitized condition. I gave his unbelievably simple recipe a try. In the 20 years since I got that letter, I've used nothing else to clean tubs, showers, sinks, toilets, patio furniture, just about anything that will stand still long enough to get sprayed. The only other criterion is that it must be a surface that can easily be rinsed, because this product must be rinsed off. Here are the ingredients. An empty spray bottle, Blue Dawn liquid dish soap, any variation as long as it is Dawn and it is blue, and white vinegar. To make it, you pour 1 cup of Blue Dawn into the 32-ounce spray bottle. 1/2 cup of Dawn if you are using a 16-ounce bottle. Fill the bottle to the top with white vinegar. Screw on the sprayer top. Gently shake to mix. Now to use it, spray liberally to the area to be cleaned. Allow it to sit for at least 30 minutes and possibly even overnight, depending on the severity of the scum, mildew, and hard water buildup. all of the offensive gunk and grime will break down and become soft and gooey. Simply rinse it away. For especially challenging situations, or if this is the first time, use a sponge or brush to scrub the surfaces before rinsing. To treat mildew and mold, while the tub, tile, and shower cleaner works to loosen and remove most mildew, if you see a lot of black growth, you will want to pre-treat with full-strength liquid chlorine bleach before proceeding with the above steps. Caution: never, ever allow chlorine bleach to come in contact with other products, especially vinegar. This could produce chlorine gas, which is deadly. Don't panic. Simply make sure you rinse the chlorine bleach away completely before proceeding to clean with the homemade tub and tile cleaner. Now, to maintain, here's the best thing about this cleaner. If you use it weekly, you will never have to scrub again. Once a week, as I shower, I spray down the walls, doors, tracks, faucets, mat, and the entire shower with this magical cleaner. Before I step out, I use the handheld sprayer to rinse it all away. No scrubbing required. It dries sparkly clean without using a squeegee or touching it with a towel, and not a watermark to be seen. Simply brilliant. I use this stuff in the kitchen too, on my appliances and stainless steel sink and faucets, never on my granite countertops, but only where it can be rinsed away. This means I don't spray it on the floor or into the air. That would create a slippery, soapy mess. I can't wait to get your feedback once you give this super simple cleaning and maintenance method a try. We turn now to an editorial written by the Decatur Herald and Review staff. The headline is House Needs to Protect Taxpayers. The Illinois Senate last week decided to place a good deal of the state's budget and your tax bill in the hands of an arbitrator. The House may consider doing the same thing this week. The Senate voted 38-15 to override Governor Bruce Rauner's veto of a bill that would allow binding arbitration in the event the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees and Rauner can't reach an agreement on a new contract. The bill would allow AFSCME to declare an impasse and allow a panel of three arbitrators, two of them most likely sympathetic to the union, to decide on a contract that currently stands at about $7.5 billion. That's about 20% of the state's budget. The union's initial offer in negotiations would have cost the state an additional 29% over 4 years. The bill is a clear shot at Rauner. It expires after 4 years when Democrats apparently hope to have a new governor in office to protect their union friends. The Senate vote was largely along partisan lines, with Senator Andy Menar, Democrat Bunker Hill, voting for the bill. Menar, who has painted himself as a legislator who can work both sides of the aisle, has recently acted and voted more partisan. Senators Jason Barrickman, Bill Brady, and Chapin Rose all voted no. The bill's future in the House is a little more uncertain. During the original vote on the bill, it was four votes short of the amount needed for a veto override. The bill, which Rauner rightly thinks is terrible legislation, also could be used as a negotiating tool to get the governor to back away from some aspects of his turnaround agenda. This is what passes for leadership in Springfield, playing political games with contracts that could cost taxpayers billions of dollars. Negotiations between ASME and Rauner on a contract that expired in July have been unproductive to date. State workers deserve a fair contract, but fair means it is balanced between the needs of state union workers and the taxpayers. The best way to achieve that goal is to allow Rauner and ASME to negotiate a contract. Rauner has pledged that he won't lock the workers out. Allowing a third party, especially one that will be biased in favor of the union, is a terrible plan. It's also horribly unfair to taxpayers who will have to pay the bill or leave the state, as thousands have already done. Money not only doesn't grow on trees, it also doesn't sprout out of taxpayers' wallets just because legislators can't control their spending. House members, some of them Democrats, need to stand up and protect taxpayers from this unfair piece of legislation. Steve Chapman, who blogs daily for the Chicago Tribune, has another opinions column. This is copyrighted by the Herald Review. And the headline is, GOP Gets It Wrong on Birthright Citizenship. Republican presidential candidates often invoke Jesus, but likely they sound more like Jehovah. Rather, that word is lately, not likely. The Old Testament says, I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. Punishing kids for their parents' sins is the idea behind proposals to revoke birthright citizenship. Donald Trump started the discussion with an immigration plan that promised to stop letting all those born in America automatically become Americans. Ted Cruz agrees, as do Rand Paul, Rick Santorum, Ben Carson, Lindsey Graham, and Bobby Jindal. Scott Walker said he did, but then hedged. Chris Christie is open to the suggestion. Under established law, a child born here is a U.S. citizen, even if the parents are present without permission. That rule derives from the 14th Amendment, which grants citizenship, quote, to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, unquote. So changing the rule would mean amending the Constitution. Even if that were a serious possibility, it would be a bad idea. Getting rid of it would create a raft of problems without delivering any offsetting benefits. In the first place, it would consign many people born, raised, and educated here to inferior status forever. They could be deported to countries that many have never seen. Most would stay because we lack the resources to find and banish them all. But they'd be blocked from full assimilation, lacking any particular reason to be loyal to the land of their birth. This scenario is not speculation. In the 1960s, Turkish migrants were allowed to live and work in Germany. But until 1991, neither they nor their descendants were eligible for German citizenship, so they were estranged from the rest of the country. As the New York Times reported in January, this population lived in, quote, tight-knit communities, largely isolated from Germans, except in the workplace. That sentiment of separation lingers to this day, end quote. Likewise, abolishing birthright citizenship in the United States, quote, would lead to the establishment of a permanent class of unauthorized persons, end quote, said a 2010 analysis by the Migration Policy Institute. If two people born here but deprived of citizenship grew up and had children together, those kids would also be deprived of citizenship. The MPI study estimates that by 2050, there would be 1 million third-generation foreigners living here. Trump deems birthright citizenship the biggest magnet for illegal immigration, quoting him, which is like saying Trump is the main reason people move to New York. Unauthorized immigrants come here in search of jobs or family reunification, not the nearest maternity ward. Many reproduce because that is what human beings tend to do, especially if they are young and fertile, as this group tends to be. Anchor babies, as their offspring are pejoratively known, are the byproduct of unauthorized immigration, not the cause. A 2011 study by the Pew Hispanic Center reported that only 9% of the unauthorized foreigners who had babies in 2009 and 2010 had arrived in the U.S. in 2008 or later. More than 60% arrived before 2004. Santorum points out that most countries in the developed world don't offer such enticements to illegal emigration. Those are his words. He fails to note that even without it, the nations of the European Union have millions of unauthorized immigrants. Rich countries have a way of attracting natives of poor nations, even if they try to keep them out. Anti-immigration groups bewail birth tourism, in which foreign women travel here near the end of their pregnancies. That practice is rare. There were just 8,583 births to foreign non-resident mothers in 2013, or one out of every 459 births. Trump and others don't realize the change would have consequences for all the children whose parents don't sneak in. Gregory Chen of the American Immigration Lawyers Association says that today nearly everyone uses a birth certificate to prove citizenship. Under a revised rule, you'd need a new bureaucracy to verify each and every newborn child's eligibility. Americans would have to apply to the federal government just to assure their kids the perquisites of citizenship. If he gets his way, Trump's grandchildren may not thank him. As policy changes go, this one stands out for a sort of perverse genius. It would tangibly benefit no one, while harming not only unauthorized immigrants and their American-born kids, but also American citizens and theirs, and for all those who can attest with pride that they were born in the USA, it would offer a sour retort. So what? Again, Steve Chapman blogs for the Chicago Tribune, and this is copyrighted by the Herald and Review. We'll turn now to the Decatur Tribune Online and find out what Paul Osborne is writing in his City Beat column. The headline is, Financial Technology Company Ranks Decatur Number 7 with Highest Real Minimum Wage. This is going to surprise some people who have been hearing and reading about Decatur's low minimum wage and the attempt to raise the minimum wage for local citizens. Financial technology company Smart Asset has sought out the U.S. cities with the highest and lowest minimum wage, that is, adjusted for the cost of living. And Decatur ranks number 7 with the highest real minimum wage. The Illinois state minimum wage is $8.25 per hour, 14th highest in the country, said Jeremy Bennett of Smart Asset. Earlier this year, the Illinois State Senate passed a bill that would increase that wage to $11, but that bill has yet to pass the State House. If that bill does pass, Decatur may well one day have the highest real minimum wage in the country. Even without that increase, minimum wage workers in Decatur, where the cost of living is 11.3% lower than the national, are earning a cost of living adjusted wage of about $9.30 per hour. There's a website you can go to at smartasset.com for complete details on the study, including full methodology and rankings. Here's an interesting headline. Man eats fake license sticker during traffic stop. And this article is from the Associated Press, and it took place in West Chicago, Illinois. Authorities allege a 46-year-old suburban Chicago man ate a counterfeit license plate registration sticker during a traffic stop. John M. Brannon of West Chicago was pulled over this month for a suspended registration because he allegedly didn't have insurance. A Kane County Sheriff's Office report says Brannon got out of his pickup on August 11th and bent near his license plate. When the arresting deputy asked where the sticker was, Brannon reportedly said it was fake and he ate it. Brannon faces obstruction of justice and destroying evidence charges along with other traffic offenses. He's free on bond and due in court Thursday. It was unclear if he has an attorney. A message left Monday at a number linked to Brannon wasn't returned. This has been Carol Bond reading today with you the Decatur Herald and Review, August 25th date. It's been a pleasure, and I really look forward to reading with you again.